Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
Awesome. Too bad. Is it the main event something shitty, though, like fucking Beer Money against Ink Ink?
It's actually, I think the main is Mr. Anderson versus Jeff Hardy.
Ooh, five-star classic right there.
That might not be the best, but also got Beer Money and Scott Steiner versus Jeff Jarrett and Ink Ink. And Matt Hardy against AJ Styles. And probably the best thing on the show, probably Kazarian versus Brian Kendrick. And so, and I guess the knockouts will be there as well. And, yeah, getting ready to go here. Probably only going to be on the show for about 15, 20 minutes. And my son, who will be 5 in June, is going with me. He's going to his first big wrestling show, and he's not as excited because I told him that John Cena wouldn't be there, so he's he was stoked to go to WrestleMania, but I told him that no, that's not what we're doing, and then no, John Cena won't be there, so he's a little sad, but I think after we get done with the show, he'll be happy he went. So
well, it is TNA. You never know. You may be scarred for life from wrestling.
Actually, the house shows are always fun. We went to the show last time they were in town, and it is a good time. Their house shows are always good. And, I'm stoked. I'll be sitting ringside with Brian and Whitney and, as I said before, Cameron. And, it should be a good time.
Cool, man. How did y'all get the tickets? Did y'all buy them, or did somebody get some freebies there?
No. I don't think Brian talks to anybody. I shouldn't say that. Brian doesn't talk to anybody who he would get tickets from because the way he buries them all the time. Like, he has no problem getting WWE tickets. But for some reason, he can never come up with TNA tickets. It's kind of weird how that works out. But there's actually a meet and greet. If you buy ringside tickets, there's a meet and greet that starts like 2 hours before the show, and he's not going to make that, nor would he care. But I'm going to text him and tell him that, hey, I just talked to Matt Hardy and he wants to meet you. See how that goes.
he'd probably act like, oh, I don't care if I meet him, whatever. You know, he's scared to death to go over there. It's like, you know, Barry is scared to death to go to Cayman, just like he was to go to WWE back in the day.
Yeah, well, after the burial of Matt Hardy and his brother Jeff, and they're both going to be there tonight, I figured it would be a good rib on him. So, see how that goes.
It's too bad you're straight edge, Craig. You could probably score some good drugs off of the Hardy brothers.
I don't know if straight edge is the right word, because I do take some medication for pain, and I thought it would be funny if I just, you know, ate pills right in front of them while I'm sitting ringside. I thought that would be a good gag on them.
Hey,
look, Jeff Vicodin.
And you did a good job at the last house show, so I expect plenty of Velvet Sky photos again posted on the board in my honor tonight.
I actually have a new camera that's like twice as good as the old one, and it's got like 15 times the zoom. So yes, I will be taking some pictures this evening. Although I don't think Velvet Sky is on the show tonight.
Oh, I would demand my money back. That's bullshit.
It's funny. A local radio station around here, they do a podcast, and the producer of the show is a huge wrestling fan, and they had Hogan on his little podcast. If you want to check it out, you go to www.kisw.com and then look up Steve the Producer, his audio show. And they talked to Hogan, and then they were supposed to have Velvet Sky on, and they were all just, you know, being kind of raunchy. Oh, I can't wait to talk to this chick, you know, and just, and oh, she's so sexy and this and that. Well, anyway, long story short, Velvet Sky no-showed the interview, and Mr. Anderson took his place. So they were kind of bummed about it, you know.
I'd want to kick somebody's ass.
They were bummed about it because they were all just, you know, they were like looking at pictures. You know, they were like talking about, oh, look at these pictures, and then, oh, look at this entrance on YouTube, and this and that and the other thing. And then they got Mr. Anderson. But long story short, Anderson stayed on with them for about 40 minutes, and it was like one of the best interviews I've ever heard. It was totally out of character. He was there shooting with them. He was talking about how Shawn Michaels and Randy Orton and Cena hated him and this and that. And it was a really, really good interview. So if you get the chance, go check that out. It was an awesome interview, and I have a little bit more respect for Mr. Anderson now.
Wow. At least someone does.
I said a little more.
Yeah. I guess I had been asked earlier in the day to call our other co-host and wake him up, which I did repeatedly before the show, and right on cue, he calls in, so I guess he was just waiting for that. So, are you there? Have you woken up yet? What's up?
I showed up at 6. Nobody was here at 6.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention that, but yeah, you did the same thing to me. Yeah, we're doing it at 4 your time, Craig, and then I checked in all your updates, and it said 4:30, and then you just happened to be on the Facebook at the same time, so popped up.
Don't
be
it.
4:30. So,
it's,
sorry,
it's
Eddie,
not my
this
fault.
Is your fault. No, it's totally
it's not
your
my fault. It's Brutal Bob's fault. He swerved me. He put that on me on the last second because he's working late, but he's getting out at 8 o'clock.
Don't
his
tell
time,
when
so.
A guy pulls out on you at the last second, and that always injures me really bad.
So what's going on, Kachara? Where you been?
I was eating fish, and that's kind of like a euphemism for like something different. I was actually eating fish, and I was eating fish. I talked to Brutal Bob like at 5 o'clock this morning. Was he not going to be on the show?
Yeah, I know. You started. I am. And you're all happy because you think that Brutal Bob thinks you're a legend.
Well, that's what he said. Why would he say that if it wasn't true?
Hmm.
He's a worker.
Oh, yeah, you're really going to get over working old Contreras here, you know? Whatever.
Yeah. But, Craig, since you're not going to be on the line the whole time, I want to talk about the UFC show last night. Did you see the UFC show?
No.
Yeah, well, actually, I shouldn't say I watched. Please don't crucify me, but I actually watched TNA first. And then it got late, and so I only caught the main event of the UFC show.
I wish TNA was
Well, I expect you to try to watch TNA, but I'm a little disappointed in you, Craig.
Well, I'm going to the show tonight, so I thought I might, you know, bone up on, you know,
like,
what's going on.
The New World's champion tonight, TNA show.
Well, you know, it's like a kid who hasn't done his homework and then he realizes tomorrow's test day. Well, I was cramming last night and watched TNA. So,
like, you need to watch a TNA TV show to go to a house show.
Just roll with me here, okay? No, I did watch the main event, and what a slobber knocker that was.
Yeah, that was one fucking bloody fucking fight. Now, supposedly there's controversy because I think on Wrestling Observer Radio they said Ariel Helwani was just ranting about what a robbery it was. I had Diego winning the last two rounds. How did you have the fight?
Exactly. I mean, second round, it was obvious that he won it. And the first round, all Campman, of course. The third round, it could have gone either way. At the very worst, it would have been a draw. And, I the right man won, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're going on looks, though, I mean, if you had to just look, if you didn't see the fight and you just looked at and Catman was fucked up, too, but
not
Jesus
as
Christ, I don't, that was one hell of a price to pay to win a fight because Diego looked like shit. Even Rodney was on Facebook making Asian jokes about Diego.
One of my coworkers said it best. He looked like one of the orcs from Lord of the Rings. Anyway, he looked horrible, and I would imagine there's a lot of pain in his face today, a lot of swelling, as it were.
Well, he got like a $200,000 fucking fight bonus.
It was $160,000, but yes, he did get a very nice bonus.
Is that like the biggest fight bonus that they've given out or something? I mean, that's kind of pretty high.
It's up there. It's way up there. I don't even think Brock.
As far as one fight, I think it has to be the record because I mean, they usually give around 60 or 80, so that they pretty much doubled it right there.
I mean, Dana White has been sitting there and he must have come in his seat or something. Give away $160,000, you know.
He might have because it wasn't a big building. I mean, they might have the whole gate might have gone out on fucking pay. They might have not made any really money on this show. It might have just been a tax write-off for them.
I'm watching the TNA show, and they're having a match, and like the champion from Bellator is on there.
Yep.
You know, like it's on Spike TV, and this is like the UFC channel. And then on the opposite channel is the UFC show. It's weird.
That was... they shot themselves in the foot. I mean, I'm not saying that Dana would have had any of his guys on his show to promote UFC, but they blew any chance of having it ever.
Yeah.
Oh, unless Spike asked them to.
I don't think Dana would do it.
But speaking of MMA and wrestling, the big, big shocking news, and I don't know if you guys have heard it, fucking... Cyborg is in negotiations to go to WWE.
Is that ugly bitch?
That's her.
Okay.
Is that what Couture? What did you call her?
Is that that ugly bitch?
Yeah, the one that.
Go tell me how hot she
ugly,
is.
But,
and you want to make love to her boobies or something?
Disgusting.
No, but I can guarantee you she could probably kick all three of our asses at the same time.
Well, any woman could kick my ass. It's just the manner that she does it in is, you know, what would matter to me.
I would definitely shove Ed in front of me and run.
she could take me out in like 5 seconds and she'd be able to catch you in three more, Craig, because you're not going to be running too fast.
I thought they were going to say Gina Carano was negotiating.
No.
The probability is like up there with the WWE women, so... Might as well.
Yeah, I mean, she's pretty enough to be a fucking WWE one.
They're all tough enough.
They should put Cyborg on top, though. I can't wait to see fucking Miss USA or Miss America or whatever fucking doing wrestling drills, running the ropes. That should be very fun.
And yes, so with Bill DeMott in the background yelling, "Run, you stupid cunt." I apologize. I shouldn't have said that.
She has no personality and no business on the ring, just my opinion.
Entire Bill DeMott back just to have somebody to be the hard ass of this on the show.
Well, first off, she has a nice hips, nice ass, nice legs, looks fucking hot as shit. She has every right to be on my TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I have the internet. I have access to porn. I don't care.
I don't care. I want to see as many women fucking as possible.
Jesus Christ. That's not
naked, but unfortunately, I know she won't be getting naked, so I'll have to wait till she gets fired and needs a job and pulls it for label.
And what's his name? M-Dog 20 is on the show. Matt Cross.
Oh. You know, I've lost all interest in the show after I heard Austin Aries got cut from. I mean, come on.
You know, people
are not a very good worker, and they have no personality, so I can understand it.
How dare you?
the thing with Aries that people that it's funny is that them you know everyone's up in an uproar because you know how if you're not gonna pick someone like Aries as an awesome worker to be on the show because they probably didn't take him because he is such a good worker. But the thing is, this is a fucking personality driven show, and who's gonna be the biggest fucking asshole, most person to not get along with anybody, to give the fucking trainer shit because he's fucking probably a better worker than them, fucking Austin Aries. It would have been fucking perfect fucking reality TV, and they fucking blew it.
It's all scripted.
It's wrestling.
Well, did you see that video where fucking Aries pushed that beat up that fan? That was kind of work, so, you know.
That was pretty awesome.
The one that was on that, like, it was like a documentary about a security guy. And they were like,
I worked up on True TV. Y'all watch that.
Yeah, you knew it was a work because when Aries was outside, he was clean shaven, but when they were talking to him inside, he had a full beard, so I don't know how that happened.
I was watching, like, the last one, and it had a Necro Butcher on it, so, like, the guy that they were following, and he's like, you know, I'll bust it open. And some fan was yelling at him, so the fan just conveniently had, like, a white shirt on. So, he rubbed his head all over his face. And they said, okay, well, it'll be okay. So they bring him out. They get the fan a T-shirt. It's a Necro Butcher T-shirt. And the fan fucking flips out. He just wants a Necro Butcher T-shirt. And then he's waiting out in the parking lot for him. And then Necro Butcher comes out, and he's just, like, all calm and then Necro Butcher just punches the dude in the face and then goes to his car.
So what is that whole show based on? Following ROH wrestlers as they leave the arena and punch somebody in the face?
No, they follow the ROH security guys. They follow like a process server. You know, the serving divorce papers or something like that. And they followed like tow truck company, which actually was apparently was so good that they got their own show now on True TV called Wizard Lick Towing, and apparently Champagne was on there as one of the people they were repossessing from. Marty Garner was on there like a few weeks ago.
Champagne. What kind of car did they take from him?
I don't remember. I think
was it nice
I can't
or
remember
piece of shit.
Because the show is such bullshit that, I think they were going to repossess his car, and he got so pissed off he just drove his car into a lake. So they have to get it out. And then they said, well, if you help us hook this car up, we're going to pay you like $250. So he helps them hook the car up. They pull it out of the lake, and they said, come over here, I'm going to pay you. And so they throw him in the lake and run and don't pay him. So it's pretty funny. Total bullshit show. I don't want to hear this reality show bullshit anymore. This is total bullshit.
Oh, man. That's funny. At least he took the bump into the water.
And then they were eating at the. Then the guy took his wife out to eat, like, to a pizza parlor, like, later that night. And conveniently, the guy shows up, just kind of happened to show up and was standing in the parking lot, one with $250. And so he called his partner to come over there, and he, like, got body slammed into the windshield of a car, and everybody ran. So it's fun.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was okay. But anyway, I had to switch hotels in WrestleMania, Craig, because I found out I was at the hotel that didn't have the free breakfast. So I had to switch. So
what?
I get to share a hotel with Rodney while Craig gets to share a hotel with Supersonic since he's taking my room instead.
Because you're not white.
Actually, I'm sharing a hotel room with my wife. I won't be in the hotel room with Supersonic.
Well,
I
won't
be in
the
same
hotel
as him.
Are you taking your kid with you?
I'm sorry?
Are you taking your kid also?
No. He's staying home this trip. He's too small to drag around all those shows. One show is fine, but four in one weekend is probably a little overload for him, so.
Well, I figure since your wife and Whitney's got her Femmania thing going, I thought it was like a family vacation.
They said
a real parent would take their child to WrestleMania.
What, in a few years? Come on, my dad never took me to any wrestling. One time he gave me tickets when for Christmas when I was like, 15, and he said, "Hey, you're going with your brother. All right." But he never took me to wrestling. He thought it was stupid.
He probably thought it was fucking stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess my son will end up, not liking wrestling because I took him all the time. I don't know. But yeah, I'm taking him to TNA tonight and taking him to Overlimit in May.
Parents who are, you're taking your kid to TNA.
Yep, taking him to TNA, and I'm taking him to the WWE pay-per-view when they come here in May. So,
yeah. Who's going where in May?
The Over the Limit pay-per-view in Seattle in May.
Okay, there's a fucking Raw here in San Antonio in May.
Yeah, they're not coming to that. They're going to the one in Seattle.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's that drive would kill me, and have to be back at, to go to work the next day.
Steve Austin's going to be here in Dallas on Monday.
Wow. Are you going to see him?
No, I'm not going. I don't like wrestling fans. I don't go to shows.
I don't like him either. That's why I'm taking my son and sitting with Brian and Whitney.
Unless they got a private box.
So Brian's torturing Whitney and taking her to see TNA?
I'm not going to comment on that at this time.
Did you go to her lecture yesterday with the dog that was saving the whales?
No. I didn't go hear her. But, I knew all about that thing. Yeah, whatever.
I went to the website. There was a link in like one of the daily updates. I went to the website and checked it out, and I still don't understand it, but whatever.
Yeah. Did you guys see the post Clitz did about the meat salad?
Do what?
No.
Well, there's this little YouTube video of this guy making a meat salad. In other words, no lettuce in the meat salad.
Where is he going?
And Vinny and I last week went up to Brian's to watch ROH and also UFC on pay-per-view last weekend. And as we're, probably 20 minutes from his house, Brian calls in a panic and said he's, an hour out because he's in Portland and this and that and the other thing. And so Vinny and I had this great idea to go grab a bite to eat. And if I've said it once, I'll say it 100 times. Vinny and I should not be out together because we are bad for each other. In other words, if he was an alcoholic, I would be codependent, that kind of a relationship, right?
So it's kind of like the same thing when it comes to food?
Don't get ahead of my story. So we go to this place called the Lunchbox Laboratory, and you can check it out online. I think it's lunchboxlaboratory.com. And we both ordered a shake, and we ordered a burger with fries. This burger that they served me was a quarter-pound patty, and as I lifted up the bun, I realized that there was 12 slices of bacon on it.
Jesus Christ.
And it was just smothered in cheese and onions, and it was amazing. So I cut into it, and I ate the first half, which was good, a little salty, but good, and tore into the second half, and as I'm, you know, finishing it up, I'm like, this isn't sitting well with me. So we both ate this humongous burger, and then we went to Brian's, and he walks in the door, and he has pizza in his hands. After, you know, and we're literally laying on the couch and groaning, oh, God, you know, just holding our stomachs, and we're never doing this again. How stupid this was this, and blah, 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 blah. So Brian puts pizza in, and then he proceeds to call each of us pussies for not eating. And long story short, I got up Sunday morning, got in the shower, and threw up, and laid around the house most of the day, just absolutely miserable. So if you're ever in the shower. Well, I just happened to be in the shower when it started to come up. I mean, I could have just as easily have been, you know, peeling a cucumber. Anyway,
when you vomit, there's like bigger chunks, and it's probably hard to get down the drain.
Correct. And I spent a majority of the time pushing with my feet the rest of the chunks down the drain.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Well, there's soap and shampoo in there. It's no big deal.
You were talking about that hamburger, and it sounds like you were like watching Man versus Food, and there was like a food challenge
exactly.
or something.
Exactly.
And food kicked Craig's ass.
It did. It waited like 18 hours, but it did, in fact, kick my butt.
That's fucking hilarious. That sounds like a good burger, though.
It was good for the first half, and then it turned on me. Like,
I'd probably just ate the bacon off of it.
It was too much. It was just too much. So anyway, if you're ever in the Seattle area, go to the Lunchbox Laboratory and get a shake and try the fries. That's all I'm saying.
This story was a glowing endorsement of this place.
Yeah, we're never going back. We agreed on as we're driving to Brian's, I said, Vinny, we're never going back there again, and he agreed. So we will never go back to this place, but you have to try everything once, I guess.
Yesterday I went to Sonic and got the new $2 hot dogs that they have there.
Hey, while you guys are talking about food, I'm gonna try Brutal Bob. I'm looking these off for work. So.
Hey, I need to actually get going here. I've got a
Wait till Brutal Bob. Wait till he gets through with the call, so I'm not here by myself. Please.
Yeah, I'll do that. I
don't have access to the switchboard. I can't play a song. I can't do anything.
No worries. I'll hang with you for sure.
Hopefully, Brutal Bill picks up the phone.
If he didn't, it would be brutal.
Russell got voted off last night. Or the other night. Did you see that?
Oh, that was... I am loving this season. Loving it.
It was kind of a downer when I knew he wasn't gone for good because, you know, he still has the duel and stuff like that.
I totally hate him this season. I don't know why.
I think they were smart to get him off of there, though, because had nobody watched the last 3-4 seasons of this show.
Mm-hmm.
Get this fool off of the show.
Yeah. I just don't like the dude this season. I don't know why. He just, he annoyed
me this year. He manipulates people to go to the end like every season. And I was just kind of happy to see, you know, him get tossed off in like the third week.
Yeah. I don't think Brutal Bob is home from work yet. Otherwise, Ed would be back and say, hey, I'm sorry to interrupt you guys. You know how he does. He's not sorry either. He just interrupts any old time.
Brutal Bob, he put me over on Facebook. He told me I was a legend, so I'm looking forward to the interview if he comes on this.
Sweet.
Thing. I was just farting around at 5:30 this morning. Didn't have anything to do.
5:30 more in the morning, I was on my way to work. It's a riveting conversation we're having for the callers.
5:30 in the morning, I was on my way to sleep.
Okay, come on, Eddie, I got to get going. I mean, how long does it take to call a person?
It doesn't take long.
We have this conversation every time. He takes forever.
There's a new gimmick on this, like, this switchboard where, like, you can call people. Like, you can dial out, like, your yes and stuff like this. I don't know why he does this 2-3-way thing. I don't understand it.
Well, you're dealing with Ed, and he's a stoner.
Really?
I know. It's newsflash.
Story.
Newsflash. He probably hung up on himself and is trying to call back in now.
Well, was that waiting insufferable last night or what?
It was pretty bad. I ain't going to lie. And,
I have no idea why they did that twice.
Yeah. It was like they had an extra 15 minutes to kill, and so, hey, what the heck, we'll throw the rest of this on there. They could have edited it out. Another thing, I don't know if you've noticed it, but Cookie...
Hey, guys, I'm back. I accidentally got disconnected there. I guess Bob's not out of work, so I'll call back in about 5 minutes.
What did I tell you, Katrina? What did I tell you?
What? What happened?
I told Katrina, I said, you probably hung up on yourself.
I actually
guess what happened.
When I had my old phone, I had to hang up. When I got the voicemail, but with my new phone, I don't have to do that, but I pushed the wrong button like a dumbass.
Yeah.
Like great, take off before something else happens.
All right, fellas, I got to go. Everybody, have a great weekend. And I'll definitely be on the show next week in some form of fashion.
Are you going to be on Brian and Vinny's show tonight?
Doubtful.
Yeah, phone.
I'm actually going to work in the morning. But who knows? They talk me into it, I'll be there.
Okay.
Yeah, and you better plug the show this time too, Craig.
Yeah, I'll totally do that. All right, later, guys.
All right, guys, later, Craig.
I plugged the show last night when I was on Pro Wrestling Flashback. I plugged the Brutal Bill Smith interview.
The Brutal Bill Smith interview.
I'm just kidding.
So Sinbad actually showed up to do the show?
Yeah, we did it at 11:30 last night. He was on his way home from, he's a driver at Domino's Pizza.
At Domino's Pizza?
Yeah.
Is this Brandon like his only
job?
That's
why he's been working so
job.
Much. That's why he's been working so much. He's been, you know, guys work on tips and stuff like that and make a lot of money doing that.
Huh. So I always thought he had another job. I didn't know he did that, but I hear pizza dudes actually do pretty good.
Yeah.
If you get there on time, you know, you show up late all the time and your pizza's all cold and shit, you know.
Is Domino's still 30 minutes or is free? Or is that just like a 1990s thing?
That's probably like, you know, there's no Domino's actually really close to my house, so I hardly ever call Domino's or go to Domino's. Not that. You know, I mean, I'll eat Domino's, but...
Yeah, I haven't been eating Domino's in... It must be like 10 years. I just go, like, to Pizza Hut or Papa John's.
There's a Papa John's in my neighborhood, but the motherfucker closed down, and the nearest one's, like, on the other side of town, and they don't deliver, so that kind of sucks. But I like Papa John's, so... But luckily, there's fucking Pizza Hut fucking 2 minutes away, so...
Nah.
Yeah. But, I got a text here. Let me see. Maybe it's all right. Okay, Katrina. Let me. I gotta. I got a call in here, so I don't know what you want to talk about, but
I don't have a switchboard. Play a song or something.
Oh, okay. I'll play the theme song.
You switchboard?
Yeah, I'll play the theme song.
Okay.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man! You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's good shit! Let's go hook him up!
Oh, hands on
Okay, we are back. We are joined by our special guest today. You can currently see him on Ring of Honor TV as the manager to the prodigy of Mike Bennett, and that is his manager, Brutal Bob Evans. How you doing today, Bob?
I'm well, guys. How you doing? I heard that Craig has left us.
Yes, Craig has decided to go to a TNA show and to finish the rest of the show.
Well, the TNA show, I'm sure, will be fine because they're going to let the wrestlers wrestle. So I'm sure it'll be fine. As long as they don't put too many stupid ideas in their heads, they usually happen to do okay. So
if there's no cameras there, the show will be fine.
Exactly. How you doing, Contreras?
I'm doing fine. How you doing?
Wonderful. So how are you guys on this fine Friday evening?
I'm doing pretty good. I got a little party to go to after the show, so I'm in a good mood.
Oh, it's you. I'm going to party all the way home to my wife and kids, so that's about all I'm doing tonight.
Cool. Well, speaking of tonight, I know you work in the newspaper industry. What exactly do you do for the newspapers?
Well, I'm a supervisor. I work for a company called PCF, Publisher Circulation Fulfillment, and I work in the warehouse. And I just get the papers ready for everybody, and then I fill in on down, if there's a paper route that's down or somebody can't come in for some reason, then I'm the one who handles it, so.
So you're like one of the assholes that gives me a hard time when I get a complaint when they know it's getting stolen all the time.
Exactly. And then you say, I know I delivered that paper, and then we try to be nicer about it. I've done it for a long time, so I try to be nice, and I worked as an IC, an independent contractor for a long time, just a carrier, so I definitely feel for that side of it, too, so.
He throws two papers at one house.
Hey, I do that, too, sometimes. If I can't figure out which house it is, I grab an extra paper, I throw one at one house and one at the other, so.
Yeah, I do that, and then, I have this one house where every Sunday I got to throw two fucking papers because I think he gives one to his neighbor.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully your Christmas tips, it'll reflect in your Christmas tips, right?
Actually, I really don't make fucking shit. I think I only made $300, man.
Are you a horrible newspaper delivery man, or do you just not play the game the right way?
No, I pretty much, I'm pretty, I get the papers up there, and then, I actually put the Christmas card with the envelopes ready to go so they know what the deal is. But I guess they're a bunch of poor old people because I don't really make shit now. I have a buddy of mine who works right next to me who made two $100 tips and probably made fucking over a grand.
I had one lady. Now, granted, she does a big routes. I know this is fascinating newspaper talk for everybody, but there's one lady that does, now she does quite a few papers, but and she's awesome with her customers. She did, I think, almost $5,000 at Christmas time.
Oh, Jesus Christ,
yeah.
Man.
But she works her ass off, too, so it's people in our depot do pretty good with tips, but, everybody, they're always going to bitch, that's how it is.
Yeah.
Just like wrestling. How about that for a segue?
Right? A lot of weirdos in the paper business, too, just like in wrestling.
Oh, yeah, that's what I told Brian, I told Brian, I said, I'm used to dealing with crazy independent contractors because I deal with newspapers so long, so I think that's why we all get along so well.
They don't classify them as employees and try to screw them, like in the wrestling business?
What's that?
The independent contractors. They don't, like, classify them as employees and try to screw them like in the wrestling business?
Oh, well, I'm sure if they could do it, they would, you know.
They screw us in other ways. I don't know if they do this shit where you're at, Bob, but
right.
if we get a complaint, like let's say we're making, like, okay, on Sunday, let's say we're making 10 cents for a paper, right? If we get a complaint, we get charged $2 out of our check.
I've heard of that happening before. They don't do it in our depot, but I have heard they've done it in the past. So yeah, I'm a much bigger fan of positive reinforcement than negative reinforcement. But you know, to each his own.
It's not union, but the thing is, the majority of the people who drill the newspapers really can't have jobs, like a normal job, for some reason or another. Like
You're not crazy, are you?
I'm normal.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
anyway, we'll go ahead and start talking about wrestling. I'll go ahead and get your started off.
Yeah, what made you get into professional wrestling? I mean, were you a fan growing up?
Yeah, I was a fan. I actually got into it a little bit later than a lot of people. I was born in 72, and then but I didn't get into it when I was like a real young kid. And, of course, I was in Mass, so the Northeast and New England is WWF territory. So, but I missed all the Backlund years. More became a fan of his later on. But when Hogan hit, of course, Hogan and Piper and all that, and everybody – I was in junior high, and that was, like, the hot thing to talk about. So everybody got into it, and so did I. So I just stayed with it a lot longer than everybody else. And then in 85, 86, I started watching the TBS stuff with – you know, the NWA stuff with Flair and the Crockett stuff, and then just kind of followed both companies as they came up, and that's about it with that. So, yeah, I was
a huge fan. Did you prefer one over the other?
Not really. I watched both pretty religiously. So, I mean, I guess later on I probably preferred the NWA stuff more, but it's hard to say because I'm a fan of everything that's good, so... I really don't have a lot, you know. Obviously, if something's the shits, it's the shits. So, but if something's good, we should appreciate it for what it was. I can appreciate Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair in different ways, and I don't necessarily have to say that Ric Flair's better than Hulk Hogan or Hulk Hogan's better than Ric Flair. I mean, I suppose I could. If I was pinned down, I would. But I think they both had their stinks, and they both made money for the company. So, you know, I'm not a huge flag carrier for either one. So.
Now, what show were you at that, I know you sent, like, a picture for Jim Cornette in his book. What show were you at that, which show were you at that you sent a picture for Jim Cornette's book?
Capital Combat 1990 in Washington.
Oh, you actually RoboCop.
RoboCop, I sure did. Boy, that was, that was memorable. believe it or not, looking back on it, I'm surprised that it didn't get booed out of the building, but it really didn't. Not that the people were, like, super into it, but it didn't really, like, people just kind of watched it and goes, oh, RoboCop, that's kind of funny and weird, but nobody really, like, now I think it would get booed out of the building and people would be throwing shit at RoboCop, because it took RoboCop a week to get to the ring, because the guy couldn't move that fast in the costume, so, like, when he was trying to make the save, he had to, like, walk like a robot, you know? It was pretty bad, but I mean, I was, and I remember it was hot as hell in that building. It was probably about 100. It was in May. It was probably like May, around like May 20th or May 19th, something like that. And it was warm. It was about 80, but it was about 110 in that building. So we had real good seats. I think we were like, obviously you can see from the picture, we had real good seats. We were like third or fourth row ringside. So yeah, it was awesome. I remember that was a fun show. And then I read like Meltzer's thing, and Meltzer was actually there. And I remember him saying, oh, I didn't really like the show that much. And I was like, that show was awesome. But, of course, I was a 17- or 18-year-old, you know, 17-year-old teenager who hadn't been to too many shows live, so.
It's the fact that you were there live is going to make it a good show, you know, when you're that young.
Oh, I mean, exactly. And the crowd was hot and, you know, it was sold out. Well, I think it was pretty close to sold out, but it was a small building, too. It was like a big armory or a big, like a municipal center. So it probably held like 4,000 or 5,000 people. I don't remember for sure, but I remember it was fun.
But I always wondered about the RoboCop thing. I'm thinking the guy was Peter Weller. Was it really Peter Weller, or was it just some dude in the RoboCop costume.
I don't think it was Peter Weller. I think it was probably like a stuntman or... I'm not really sure. That must be. That probably be something that Dave will probably know. But I don't know. I don't think it was him. I think it was like a stuntman or somebody. You know, probably one of the guys that did the stunts in the movie. I would imagine.
I just remember that they did on pay per view. They did a thing with like Gordon Solie where he was waiting for the arrival of RoboCop to go to the ring, and like the camera started going out, and I said Gordon Solie must be disgusted with this whole thing.
Oh yeah, the guy who did the Jack, you know, the all the Jack Briscoe matches and all the Dusty matches, you know, and all these classic Florida wrestling matches, and all of a sudden he has to wait for a fucking robot. Yep.
What's weird about that is like, you can look back and when you're young, you can see something that you think was really good, and looking back, you think it's man, that was shit. That was something that at the time you were thinking, man, this is shit, but looking back, that was awesome. Fucking RoboCop.
I really do like think that if that movie hadn't tanked, I think they would have gotten a lot more mileage out of it. What really happened is the movie sucked and it tanked. People hated it, so it didn't like. I think they thought it was going to be a big blockbuster. It would be like attaching yourself to Iron Man or something. But I remember that movie was like a sequel. It was like two or three. It wasn't the first one. I know that. And I remember like if it had hit, I think it would have actually they would have gotten some good juice out of it. But they didn't because it was like a you know. It didn't make much the first weekend. I thought it was actually excellent cross promotion. Imagine like, you know, Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3 being part of WWE. Like that'd be a big deal, you know. So, but it just didn't work. You know, it's
now
WWE dropping the ball or suffering bad luck or whatever. You know.
Did you think that was better than the Chucky cross promotion when Chucky was terrorizing Rick Steiner?
I don't know if I remember that one.
I remember that when. Rick Steiner was doing an interview, and Chucky came on the screen. And
oh, jeez.
I don't know. That was terrible.
Well, they were trying. They were trying to at least cross the road and do what they could. So.
And you also got to see the first appearance of Ellie Gunte at that show, right?
Oh, that's right. I think so, yeah. I saw him wrestle. Where did I see him wrestle? They used to come to WCW, almost never came to... almost never came to New England, very rarely, but they would come to the Meadowlands. And I remember like when that was probably a year or two later and I was in college and that was like the big thing to go drive to the Meadowlands. You know, it was 3.5-4 hours. Now we drive 15 hours and it's, you know, nothing. But back in the day, 4 hours was crazy, you know? And, I remember we saw a war game, like one of the worst war games matches I've ever seen right after Flair left. You know, the whole thing where he jumped to WWF. So, of course, the whole place was we want Flair. And then I think I saw another show. It was Liger and Pillman, and it was a much better show. It was in, like, that was December, I think, of 91. So, but, yeah, that was the only time we ever really saw WCW live. I think they came to Mass once, and I saw them once in 92. And then they didn't come back until they got, you know, they were going everywhere, Nitro and the big, Then they came to Boston and Providence quite a bit, but back then they didn't come. So
cool. Now, did you get to watch any territory wrestling, or was it just all WWE and NWA?
I watched a bit of...
Did you guys get, like, World Class up there?
Yeah, World Class they had. I watched World Class kind of past... I mean, I knew all the guys because I bought all the wrestling magazines. So I knew who everybody was, and I watched if it was on, but it was on really late. It was on at like...
Hey, sorry about that, everybody. I got disconnected, and I guess Kitcher has actually hung up on the line. So let me call Bob back here, and we will continue with the show here in just a minute here. So I apologize for this interruption, but I'll be back on in just a second here. Let me just call. I got to call Bob back. Shit, this is fucked up. Okay, everybody. I'm sorry about that. I don't know what happened. My phone just totally went out on me. But we are back. Couture is back also. So we were talking about. Actually, not even sure where we got disconnected at. But we were talking about. I think I'd asked you about world class.
Yeah, you asked me about territories of world class. I think Couture was bored and gave you the cut sign. I think that's why he threw me off. But. actually, no. I was just saying. I watched world class in passing. It was on real late. It was on super late. I think it was like 11 or 12 o'clock at night in Boston. But I know a ton of people watched because I remember one time they came to Lynn, Mass., which is about 15 miles outside of Boston, and they did a huge crowd. I remember that. And then they never came back because I guess Fritz didn't want to expand nationally. And I really thought they had a nice little niche in the area where they probably could have done a good 4,000 or 5,000, but I guess they didn't want to keep touring. But I remember they came once in 85 or 86, and they did a hell of a crowd. But I don't know. I didn't go, but I remember actually reading about it in one of the wrestling magazines. So, but I did watch in passing. I read all the wrestling magazines, like I just mentioned. So, I mean, I knew all the people. I knew all the players. But we didn't get a lot of other territorial stuff on our cable. So, but
when did you actually become you said you read the Aftermath. When did you actually become smart to the business?
I became smart to the business as a fan probably. I don't know if I'm smart to the business now, but because I tend to have a positive attitude and I'm not bitter old fucker. As you know, I play a bitter old fucker on TV, but I'm not really a bitter old fucker. So I don't know if I'm smart to the wrestling business yet. But as a fan, probably I don't know. Whenever I started really subscribing and reading the Observer, so 1990. A buddy of mine, actually it's a friend of mine that went with me to the Capital Combat show. He gave me a couple of issues to read on the plane, and I was like, wow, this guy knows all this inside stuff. So I started following that, and then actually I was started becoming a real big super fan, and then I started traveling to a lot of shows, like Dennis Coluzzo shows in New Jersey, and the WCW shows, like I just mentioned, and I would go to a lot of the big indie shows. And then I met Meltzer a couple of times. So I don't know why. I don't know what he thinks about me, you know, because I don't even think he remembers meeting me. This was a long time ago, but it was funny that he mentioned me. Oh, he does a Mickey gimmick. I thought that was funny. Dave never talks about indie guys, never puts them over. When Brian mentions them, Dave is quiet as a clam, so I took it as a big compliment that he actually said two words about me. So,
now speaking of the Mickey gimmick, I was going to ask this later, but I'll go ahead and ask you now.
Ask me anything you want, Ed. I feel like we're old friends because I listen to you guys all the time. But I know this is the first time we talk. But ask me anything you want, my man.
Well, I've been waiting for you for them to do a skit, and I know the time's running out, so it's probably not going to happen. The TV show's ending, but I was just waiting for the skit where you were going to come out. And you're going to have the chicken, and you're going to tell Mike that he chased the chicken and catch the chicken, but it ends up being where Mike doesn't end up chasing the chicken. It's you. You're the one that ends up, just, you know.
Well, Mike's too cool to chase. Mike's too cool. He's too cool to call you, like tonight, and then he's too cool to, I'm just kidding. He's not too cool to call you. You'll talk to him in due time, but I think they didn't really want. And this is me kind of extrapolating what they came up with, but I think they wanted the look and the feel of that Mickey deal. Like I said, I think I actually mentioned it in an interview before. Cornette never mentioned the Mickey thing. That's what he was talking about, but he never mentioned, like, I want you to be Mickey from Rocky. I actually had to say it to him. I was like, you want me to be kind of like Mickey from Rocky? And he's like, yeah. It was almost like it hadn't dawned on him. And I thought that was really funny because he was pretty much, I assume he had that in his consciousness, but he didn't describe, you know, Mickey from Rocky. And I said, well, you know, and we played with it. He had a couple ideas of his own, and then I sent him a picture of it. I said, well, what do you, I put the costume on. He goes, that's perfect. And I sent it to Delirious. Delirious goes, dude, this is awesome. So they were very pleased with what I put together, given their suggestions. So it was Delirious' idea as much as Jimmy. So I think the funniest part is that people say Cornette's the booker, and Delirious is the booker, and Cornette helps. I know Cornette helps a lot, but Delirious is the one that comes up with all the good, you know, pretty much all the main ideas, and he's doing a hell of a job, by the way. So, and I didn't know the guy from Adam before last year, and I think he's doing an incredible job. But getting back to that, it was just a question of the look and feel they wanted. They knew what they wanted with Mike, and since that's kind of the deal Mike plays on the indies anyway, it wasn't that far for him to do. He just used to be the epic Mike Bennett, and then they just changed it to the prodigy Mike Bennett, and then he kind of just did his own thing, so... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask, you're actually his legit shoot trainer.
Absolutely, yeah. And the funniest thing is, I think there's a misnomer or something out here. Like, Mike's had a bunch of matches. I think he's 25, but he's been wrestling since he was 17. And he's a 7 or 8 year veteran, and he's had 7,500 matches a year. So he's probably had 800 matches. He's not a green kid that walked in off the street and a big and he's very the names all love to work with him. I mean, he had a nice program on a couple of promotions with Stevie Richards. Mr. Anderson loved working with him. I know Matt Hardy used to work with him on one of the big Northeast wrestling shows, which is a big independent that always draws like 2,000 to 3,000 people. I know Matt Hardy asked to wrestle him. So I mean, he's somebody who's pretty fairly accomplished, you know. And I think they're calling him a rookie, but he's actually been wrestling for quite a while. I think his big thing was that he's an anti Ring of Honor guy, and my whole thing was let's keep him that way. And that was everybody else's idea too. So it wasn't anything I was really trying to change. But my I've always been an anti Ring of Honor guy, and now I'm kind of converted. I kind of really like the product, and I really like the guys. I don't think there's one person in that locker room I don't have a lot of respect for. If I don't like them, I have a lot of respect for them. But it's that they had to win me over, and they've done it. So
now, Mike, did he get hired at the same time as Adam Cole and O'Reilly?
Well, he did, and this is kind of a nice advertisement for the tryout camps. But Ring of Honor had a big tryout camp last year in March of 2010. And really, and this is only because I was told this, not because it was my assessment, but Mike and I were the two stars of the camp for two very different reasons. He was a kid who just needed to be seen, he just needed to be in front of somebody who could do something for him. He had done some like TV work for WWE and TNA, but never really in like a position to be featured. And then he actually got a chance to work a couple of matches and get seen all day by Delirious and Jim Cornette, and Adam Pearce was the booker at the time, and they loved him. And then I was a guy who was considered, and I think I told the story on Brian's thing. I don't want to be plugging Brian's thing all night, but I was a guy who, I had worked for Ring of Honor a couple times because I was one of the guys on the first independent show that Gabe Sapolsky had ever seen in his life. So Gabe was always had like a soft spot in his heart for me. But when I wrestled for Ring of Honor, I was 280 pounds. I was bitter. I thought Ring of Honor was the shit. So I was just going to just go. I had a terrible attitude. And I didn't really portray that, but in my heart, I did. I had a bad attitude. And then I really wanted to. And then that was a couple of years before that. It was probably 2008. And I really wanted a shot at doing things the right way. So I kind of got my head straight. And then in March of 2010, I was down to like 245. I trained my ass off. In the ring, in the gym, I had gotten a personal trainer. I changed the way I eat, the way I train, and the way I've been thinking of everything. And I just stole the camp right out from under people. But it was really because I didn't have any expectations. And Kerry Silkin pulled me aside at the end of the camp and said, "You were the surprise of the camp because we always looked at you as Mr. Bitter Indie Guy, and we didn't think we thought it was a waste of time for you to be here, but you really opened our eyes." Very impressed, and I have a lot of respect for you, and he shook my hand, and I was thrilled. And the best part was, guys, that I had 10 people with me, and those 10 guys and were probably the best people in the camp, and they've used them for TV and dark matches and stuff like that. So I won a lot of points as far as a trainer and a wrestler, you know. So
now like, when did you actually start becoming a trainer, and you know, how did that all come about?
Well, it was 2000. By then, I was an 8-year veteran, and I was driving back from a show with my wife at the time, now my ex-wife, but she gave me a tremendous gift because she kind of got me started. She called me on my bluff because I said, oh, another kid I'm with, he's the shits, he's rotten. Why do I have to keep working with these guys? I do it so much differently. I wish somebody would train this kid. And she said, well, why don't you train this kid? Why don't you, if you think you're as good as you think you are, and I'm sick of you complaining, so why don't you start training these guys? And so I said, you know, it's not a half bad idea. I didn't think I was good enough to do it, but you got to start somewhere. So I rented a buddy of mine had a wrestling ring, and I just rented it by the day once a week. And I just sent emails out to all the backyard groups in Mass. And I said, if any of your guys are interested in turning pro, I'll be happy to train you at a very low rate because I'm new at this and I want to get some experience. And one group took me up on it, and we had started with about 20 guys, and we turned out about 5 or 6, and it's just been going ever since. So I don't have a school per se now, but I go and I train at another person's school and help out once a week now. But I had a school solid from 2000 to 2000, halfway through 2008.
How many, what's it like working with a guy like Jim Cornette after watching him, you know, so much in the 80s and the 90s?
Awesome. Jimmy and I have been friends for 20 years. Casual friends, and I've always wanted to wrestle for him. It's funny because I had very strange goals in life, guys, and two of them have come true. I always wanted to, my favorite wrestler growing up was Terry Taylor, and now we're personal friends, and which is the coolest thing in the world. And then my favorite manager was Jim Cornette, and now we're personal friends, and I actually work for the guy. Working for Jim Cornette is awesome. It's also, I'm working for the mellower, not as angry as the world Jim Cornette, because you guys got to understand, he has a fantastic wife that has calmed him down probably about 1,000%. So Stacy's like the best thing that's ever happened to him. So he lets stuff roll off his back now. He's been nothing but a positive to me and the guys I've seen. I've never seen him be negative to anyone. I've seen him get on guys if they didn't do well, but in a loving, caring way. I've never seen him go, you know, fuck you. You got to remember, I saw him on a spot show in Connecticut in a high school gym in 1999. He took a ref who screwed up the main event and grabbed him, turned on the shower, and slapped him around and yelled at him, and then fired him off a show that he would never see the kid on again. So this is 1999. Now it's like I've seen big stuff, not big stuff happen, but, I mean, we lost at the last TV for HDNet in Philly. We lost power for 2 hours. And, I mean, he was frustrated, but I swear, in the old days, he would have, I mean, I think Les Thatcher tells a story, he's told that often, about Jimmy taking a baseball bat and just smashing up stuff and all this. I mean, he was as calm as everybody else. I think Delirious was more upset than Jimmy was. But
I think it's being away from the corporate side of wrestling, you know, like he was in WWE. You know, it's probably much different.
Oh, yeah. He still, you know, he doesn't really talk about – I mean, he does in passing, but he doesn't really – like, a lot of people think he's obsessed with Russo. He may throw in a Russo line, but he moves on from it real quick. And, you know, he may talk about Vince, but, you know, like I said, he'll talk about it real quick and move on. He's very focused and very excited about the Ring of Honor product, making these guys better, making them more well-rounded. No, Jimmy doesn't want everybody to turn into Ric Flair. He doesn't want everybody to turn into Tracy Smothers or whoever is, you know, everybody turn into Jerry Lawler. He just wants everybody to be the best they can be and round them out, be more well-rounded. As you can see, like, I know a lot of people have been mentioning Roderick Strong. Roderick Strong's promos have been 20 times better because
he came on this show and he learned how to be have personality. That's how it happened.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, Roddy's been getting better. I think Davey Richards' promos have been getting better. I think a lot of the guys have. And they're listening to him, and they respect him. And we traveled the long way in a van with a lot of those guys, and I, you know, everybody mentioned Cornette, and you know, I got to talk to Delirious about it. He said, you know, it's funny because, you know, he's been nothing but a help to me. He's never interfered. He supports my decisions, even if he doesn't necessarily agree with them. You know, it was exciting to hear that everybody's kind of on the same page. It's a good group of guys, you know. Like I said, I didn't know a lot of them before this trip to Chicago, and I was very impressed, you know, especially with Delirious. I mean, just getting kind of picking his brain a little bit. And I had known him as a trainer because I had attended a few of the seminars, and I know he's a heck of a trainer. And he's one of those guys, you know, but it's like you really feel proud. And even if I got fired tomorrow, I'd say the same thing. You really feel proud about the company, and you feel good about the direction they're in when you have these people. You know, I think, whatchamacallit, did you guys read Vinny's rundown of the ROH pay-per-view in the newsletter, the Figure Four, this week?
I'm trying not to read Vinny.
Well, Vinny,
I don't think anyone reads the Figure Four. I think everyone just reads the Observer.
I read both of them because they might give me a shout out. So I read, you know, and I can tell my mom that I'm in some printed publication. So, he said, isn't it funny how Kevin Kelly was a bad announcer because he couldn't tell stories in WWE, and now he's a good announcer in Ring of Honor because he can tell stories. And you know, I thought that was a good point. I actually mentioned it to Kevin today, and he's like, well, it's easy to tell stories when they're very easy to tell. You know, and that's the thing. It's like the booking is very straightforward. I think it's actually actually more conservative. And I always thought Adam's booking was pretty conservative, and I liked it. But I think Hunter's been even more conservative, but I think it's worked for the product, you know. But that's one of the things that I thought was funny. You know, it's like all these guys that couldn't work were boring. Like Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, who were blowing the roof off the place, somehow were boring in WWE, but they're exciting when they wrestle the Briscoes. And it's just, you know, Kevin Kelly, who was a third or fourth string announcer, is now at the top of his game. You know, I just say it's funny, you know, how I think if you put people in different lights, I think it really works out well, you know.
How would Michael Cole do in the Ring of Honor?
It depends, because it is Michael Cole a peckerhead because they tell him to be a peckerhead, or is he a peckerhead because he's an asshole, you know? I mean,
most likely because they're telling him to be a peckerhead.
Right, exactly. I mean, Michael Cole in a relaxed environment where he's left 95% to his own devices, you know? I mean, I'm very close with Kevin Kelly, and I know how much work he puts into these preparing. I mean, I remember the first pay-per-view he did, he had probably about 40 pages of typed notes. And I know he still works off a lot of notes. And I know he gets with every guy for 10 to 15 minutes and says, well, how do you want me to tell this? This is what I'm thinking of. I mean, not produced and not, hey, man, let's talk about it for 25 minutes, but just, hey, what are you thinking? Where's the angle going? You know, and I think that makes everybody feel good about it. And then Kevin can wing it and still do a great job, but I think the fact that he tries to really tell the stories and put it across to people who may not know all the stories of the guys, I think that's just a testament to the work he's done.
And being a hermaphrodite is even, you know, his work is even more impressive.
Well, I cannot confirm or deny, so that's all I'll say. My official comment is no comment.
So going back to you, you said you want to be plugged in the Figure Four Weekly. I have bad news for you. That's not going to happen. Brian is very lazy. He just copy and paste the same names over and over again every week, whereas Dave Meltzer will actually take the time and credit you and put your name in the Observer.
I don't care. I just want them to say nice things about me. That's all. If they cut a paste or write it on their own, that's fine. But it's you know, I like Brian. I enjoyed the interview I had with him, and I like Vinny because Vinny's a funny guy. So,
it takes too long to read the Observer.
Guys, so. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It takes too long to read the Observer.
Well, it's all that. But if it's printed, it's all those little words. At least on the computer, you can look at it a little bigger. You know.
Now, speaking of Brian, everybody knows. Because you did it on a show where you went through Granny to have Granny ask why he hasn't accepted your challenge, and you wanted to do the Iron Man week where you just wrestle every day for an hour.
Yes, sir.
When you actually first asked Brian about this, what was his exact response? Or did he even respond to you at first?
Let me see. He said, he actually said, you know, this is something I might be interested in. And I was fired up about that. I just, it was kind of a happy problem because what happened was all the Ring of Honor stuff happened at the same time. So I just couldn't make it all work. But, yeah, I was going to do one. And I still have a big one that I want to do that I haven't put across yet that's going to be very ambitious. And it's going to make Iron Week look like a three-minute squash match on TNA. So hopefully not as confusing. But it'll be good. You guys will like it. So I cannot divulge. If I do, you guys will be one of the first ones to know.
Now, when you came up with that idea for Iron Week, were you drinking or something?
No, I don't. I wish I could blame it on drinking. No, actually, what happened was I got pissed off because somebody had brought up something about indie guys, and Dave, and it wasn't anything Dave said. Dave didn't say anything negative. He was quoting a source from WWE. He goes, "Oh, WWE's not looking for indie guys. They don't think there's anybody here." And I was like, I'm looking. I said, I could throw a rock. I was actually at a gym when I was reading this on my phone. I said, I'm at a rock. I could throw a rock and hit eight guys that could walk in and take spots out of the bottom WWE or TNA guys any day of the week. And I said, they look better. They're better in the ring. In my opinion, it's all opinion, but, and a lot of them have actually gone on to do good things in Ring of Honor. One of them was Bennett. One of them was Tommaso Ciampa, who's going to be a big star in Ring of Honor, in my opinion. There's a couple of other guys who have done dark matches for WWE and Ring of Honor. I fired off an email back to him, and I said, I'm not angry at you guys, but I said, I don't care if you forward this to your WWE guys. I said, but there's got to be 15 or 20 guys in the fucking area that are as good as any of these guys. And then it was one of those things where I said, well, I'm going to try to prove it. And I took six guys. I think I had only wrestled two of them, and I said, we're going to wrestle for an hour. And they were like, you're crazy. And I said, I know. But the whole point was that if I can go in the ring and wrestle, or not even me, if somebody can go in the ring and wrestle me for an hour, I think that's a testament to their working ability. And I think that's a testament to their courage, because I think that's a courageous thing to do. I think I think you have to kind of have balls to do that and say, yeah, I can hang with this guy who's been around for a while, you know. And you know what? Everybody was nervous about it going in. We did six of them in a row. We did six over 6 days. And everybody was nervous about it going in. And then when they were done, they felt a nice sense of accomplishment. And we all had good matches. It was a lot of fun, you know. But it was also guys that nobody ever heard of, and still some people haven't heard of. But I was just it was the point of I was just pissed off. I was like, you got to be kidding me. WWE doesn't see these indie guys. It just shows that they're not looking. You know,
yeah.
They're not interested in India. They just weren't looking, you know.
Well, they only like to look at guys that are like 6'4" or taller.
Well, yeah, you know, but The Miz ain't 6'4", and, you know, The Rock's not 6'4". Rock's 6'2", but he's not 6'4". You know, Cena's not 6'4". I mean, it's crazy that they look for all these guys that are tall when most of the tall guys have disappointed them. So why, you know, it's crazy. They look for these big green guys, and then the big green guys fuck up, and then they end up bringing it back to, all right, Daniel Bryan, get a match out of this guy, you know? And it's like, well, why don't you just push Daniel Bryan in the first place? I'm not one of these guys that thinks Daniel Bryan should be a world champion, but I think in U.S. champion, he could do fine, make himself plenty of money, live a nice, comfortable lifestyle, and be a very respected guy in the business.
Well, what do you think of the whole Sheamus deal that's come up, like that supposedly he's being punished because he was acting like he had an attitude, even though they made him the world champion, and he's trying to project the aura of being a top guy, but he's not, in their eyes, he's not a top guy yet, so now he has to be punished.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's so political, you know, it's just so, it just doesn't make sense, because if one guy doesn't like you, then the word gets out. It's spread a big, you know, that's happened here. I mean, that's happened on the local level. Some guy, he big leagued me. He wouldn't shake my hand. He acted like he was a star. You know, who the fuck does this guy think he is? And then it just kind of, you have to work hard to get past that reputation. So I like Sheamus. I mean, is he Ric Flair? No. But is he different? And does he put something across that's different from everybody else? Yeah. So I think it's going to have to be him just gutting it out, doing what he has to do, and then just he'll be fine again. You know, they do that where they give a guy a push, cut him off at the knees, and then build him back up again. So I don't know why they do it.
See how they react to it. You know, to being
exactly. You know, well, I think that's just what happened. It was just, you know, a couple guys got their hair across their ass. Happened with CM Punk too. Something about disrespected the Undertaker, or and then you know, but now CM Punk's in a good spot now too. So everybody can't be the champion, guys. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily that. I just think, and I'm not saying you guys are saying this, but I think there's a perception out there that if you don't get the belt, that they're not pushing you the right way. I mean, CM Punk doesn't need a belt, and he'll still be a pushed guy. Like, I don't think CM Punk's getting a bad push now. And, I mean, he has had his times where he's gotten buried, but, you know, or done a share of jobs or whatever. But I think that CM Punk is in a good spot right now. I'm just using him as an example. But I think Daniel Bryan's in a good spot, you know?
You know, I think that some fans I just think fans today have no patience because, you know,
sure.
You know, like watching like in the old days and stuff like that, sometimes it takes like 3 or 4 years for a guy to, you know, get to a certain spot. I just think that they don't, when they see a guy getting like buried on TV, they think like that's the end for him. And you know, that's where all the bitching comes in, I think.
Well, I just thought of this one as an example, but it kind of comes to mind. Because I didn't really learn this lesson until way later on, but I remember it was 86, and Steamboat was in between angles. He had just finished the thing with Jake, and then they were going to start him with Macho Man in the fall. But I remember in the summer, he did jobs to everybody, like to get people ready. You know, Bravo, Kamala, just whoever was the fresh, hot guy. And then because he was just kind of a guy he was like a man without a country. He wasn't getting buried. He was just this. In a position where he just didn't have anything right now, so he just put guys over clean as a sheet, and then when it was time for Macho Man, he just went to Macho Man. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal, you know?
Yeah, if
so
there had been the internet back then, then, you know, people would have been flipping out about it.
Right, exactly. I think a lot of the times fans are just smart enough to be dangerous, where they know enough, but then they extrapolate or they jump to conclusions way too much. Like, if John Morrison loses a match this week, it doesn't mean that Vince McMahon hates him or he pissed on his shoes in the urinal in the bathroom. It just means that that's what they needed at the time. There have been times when I thought I was king shit, best worker in the company of my little places, and somebody walked up to me and said, I really need you to get this kid over. I really need him to beat you tonight. And tomorrow I need the same thing in this other town. Well, I can have an ego and be mad about it, but I'm not being buried. I'm actually feeling pretty complimented right now because the guy trusts me to be in this position, you know? So sometimes a loss it's important to lose the right way as it is to win the right way. So, I don't necessarily think a lot of times guys are getting quote unquote buried. I think we're reading way too much into things before they play out. So.
Yeah. Now we're basically in the time of WrestleMania here. So we got WrestleMania coming up here pretty soon. What are your thoughts on the card so far? And are you excited for WrestleMania?
I'm excited for WrestleMania for several reasons. First of all, is that Ring of Honor is going to be running that same weekend too, so that's exciting. But I will not be there, and neither will the Prodigy because they couldn't find an opponent good enough for them. But we rest assured we will make our presence felt that weekend one way or another. If it's by video or by live satellite feed, we certainly will do that. But as far as the WrestleMania show itself, I'm excited about, I'm glad to see Jerry Lawler is getting a shot. And I'm glad to see Undertaker's back with the Triple H thing. I think that's going to be interesting. I'm not blown away by the two title matches, although I do like Alberto. I think it's nice that he's getting a shot, and I think it's good that they didn't wait on him. I hope he wins the belt because I think that's the next, that's the final piece for him to really get over with the people. So, how about you guys? What do you guys think?
I think it's a decent card.
It seems like a solid show, but not really a spectacular show. And obviously,
it's not the greatest lineup. I mean, it's not the greatest lineup, but I'm sure like one of the opening matches will probably be Sheamus versus Bryan Danielson. I'm sure that's going to be a great match just for the fact that Bryan's in there. But you know, I'm sure that's going to be fine, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to be bitching that there's too many women involved, but, you know, I think that's just, you know, I have no problem with that, so.
The car kind of looks less than previous years because they've taken the money in the bank off of the show, I think.
That is one thing I'm disappointed in, is no money in the bank, but.
Well, but I think it's good if they're going to do a pay-per-view. They should. I don't think they should have a Money in the Bank match, even though I like the match. It's a fun match to watch, but don't tell Les Thatcher I said it was a fun match, because I know he hates that term. But but it's fun, because it's not something that I would really be – I don't think that would be my strength as a wrestler to do that kind of a match. So I think it's cool when I see different stuff like that, you know, like a ladder match where it's – the different kind of spots, the stuff they come up with, you know, and I knew Kofi a little bit because he was from the area, and, you know, I'm a huge fan of Kofi. I love when he does awesome, and, you know, just excited about it. I mean, Johnny Curtis, I remember Johnny Curtis when he was a teenager, and now he wins NXT, and, you know, it's exciting, you know. It's just, you know, you love to see guys that you do well. I don't get jealous anymore. I just, I get pissed when people, you know, don't like what I like with those guys, or they don't see Kofi as like a. I think Kofi could be a right below top guy if they pushed him the right way. If they gave him more of an edge, you know. But
I think some people see Kofi as a small guy, but he's actually like pretty tall. For it's just kind of like not noticeable with his style.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, I mean, he's probably 6 feet tall. I mean, he's not short. He's above average height. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I always thought he had a big, like a good build, and when I saw him at TV, he seemed like he had put on some good muscle, and, you know, just a very humble kid, and, you know, he's just a good kid, and he hasn't changed. That's what I love about, you know, when people are successful and they don't change, you figure that they're just going to keep having that success because it hasn't gone to their head, you know, so.
Now is there you know, we talked about you training Mike Bennett, but is there anyone else that we would know out there?
Well, Mike Bennett is probably the biggest guy I've trained from pretty much scratch. I've had a hand in training a lot of people. Antonio Thomas, who has wrestled as the heartthrob, one of the heartthrobs. Nikki Rocks, Roxy. I've helped her. I wouldn't say I've trained her.
Katrina's in love with her.
I'm in love with her, too. She's fantastic. And if you met her as a person, you'd like her that much more because she's, like, the sweetest girl in the world. So she's doing a lot of fitness stuff now. That's her. I mean, she still wrestles from time to time, but she's doing a lot of fitness stuff. I couldn't believe when they started this huge thing on the board about how ugly she was. I was like, I wish I was as ugly as her if I was a girl.
I thought she was at her hottest when she had no hair.
Absolutely. And she still has, like, that cute short haircut. It really, to me, it shows off. She had kind of a scraggly long hair. Like I didn't like her the way her hair was long. I actually thought that was like the best thing in the world for her. And like I said, she's just a great spirit, a fantastic girl, you know.
When she does those fitness competitions, she posts them on Facebook, and I mean, she has like zero body fat. I mean,
she does a lot of personal training, and she's. Doing, from what I understand, she's doing really well with that. I text her from time to time just to check in on her, you know. I don't think there were too many people happier for me than she was when I got the Ring of Honor gig, and that just tells you what kind of person she is, you know, because she knows how hard I was trying at times to get into, you know, WWE or TNA or, you know, and then the Ring of Honor thing kind of didn't necessarily fall in my lap, but it was nice that some, you know, Jimmy and Hunter were actually looking for something for me, and they found it. So, but cool. Yeah, she's a hell of a girl, great girl.
We're actually down to our last 4 minutes of Lifetime. So let me just throw out our plug real quick. Everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. Katrina, go ahead.
Pro Wrestling Flashback. We're on Thursdays now. It'll be like between 10 and. And 3 o'clock in the morning, so we're not sure yet, but it'll be on Thursdays.
Cool. Well, I'll go ahead and let you ask the last question, Katrina.
I love it.
Yeah, I know you're a big detractor of Ring of Honor, and I was just wondering, why were you a big detractor of them, and what kind of made you change your mind about them?
Well,
you got hired.
Yeah, well, no, actually, I was starting to change my mind on it, too. I think one of the biggest things that they did that really was a positive was they hired Jimmy. Actually, Jimmy, they didn't even really hire Jimmy because Jimmy, they called Jimmy, and Jimmy, it was kind of like a mutual thing. Jimmy was like, I was just about to call you guys. So that really helped because I knew that if I got in the right environment, I knew I'd do well in Ring of Honor. And I knew if Jimmy was going to be a part of it, it would signal a change in the company. Not that it was going to become 1982 Memphis, but the fact that it was going to be a more well-rounded product. I don't think there's anyone that's a bigger fan of Davey Richards than Jim Cornette. And I know that sounds funny, but Jim, you got to remember, guys, Jim was one of the guys who was watching Japan tapes. He was watching Mexico tapes. Jimmy's a huge fan of everything that's good. And, you know, if it sucks, it sucks. But if it's good, he'll watch it and he'll respect it. So I think that signaled a change in the company. I think Adam brought forward a lot of change in the company. Some people might disagree with me on that, but I think Adam did a great job. And Delirious, of all people, is somebody who has shown me how incredibly open-minded and well-rounded he can be, too. Because my whole thing with Ring of Honor was it was all little kids with no bodies doing a bunch of fucking stupid spots, and they'd be dead by the time they were 28. And now it's not like that anymore. It's a big old bunch of different kind of people. It's like the wrestling we grew up on. It's, you know, it's Davey Richards, but there's Colt Cabana, and then there's Grizzly Redwood, and then there's Mike Bennett and Bob Evans for a little seasoning. And then, you know, there's Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli, but on the other side we have the All Night Express, who are a little different too. And now Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin come in to lend their expertise, and, you know, the Briscoes are there, and it's just a different – it's not all – just one kind of style of wrestling. It's a bunch of different styles, and everybody's got to try to work together and make a great show. So that's why it changed for me. It's just they started – I kind of got more open-minded, and at the same time, so did they. So I think it just worked out well that we kind of met at the same time. So that would probably be my best answer in a nutshell.
Okay. My second to last question real quick. If you had mentioned taking, like, a long van trip with the guys from Ring of Honor –
yep.
At any time, did anybody ever, or you, just want to grab Roddy's bag of fucking almonds and throw him out of the van?
Who grabbed what?
His bag of almonds.
No. Well, it's all a bunch of calories there. It's a 90-second call.
Very good.
They're all a bunch of healthy eaters on that. I mean, you got Bennett, you got Claudio. I mean, you got Rhett Titus. You know, Delirious, who's the booker and doesn't even wrestle anymore for Ring of Honor, is in a great shape. So they're all passing around the almonds and tuna and, you know, healthy stuff. So
I don't know if it's
hard to hang with the crew, you know? Oh, go ahead, guys. I'm sorry. All that healthy stuff. That stuff will kill you, right?
Yeah. My last question is I guess it's you're even a self-admitted that you used to be basically just your personality in general, that you were basically an asshole, and you've since changed your, like, attitude and mentality since then. How did that come about? I mean, usually you have nice people that turn into assholes. You usually don't have the asshole turn into a nice person.
Well, I think I was a nice guy generally, but I think I was an elitist when it came to wrestling. I thought my way of wrestling was the best way. And I think I put that across too much, where I was nitpicking a lot of the young guys. I don't know if you have any. Are you guys gonna be okay if I go longer, or how's this gonna?
Well, it's just our live feed that cuts off. It still records, so we're good.
No.
We're
gonna go to the news. Okay. But I think it's just a question of I don't know if you guys have everybody in this live. You might have somebody at the paper like that, Ed. If you don't do it their way, if you don't bag the papers their way, if you don't deliver it to the house their way, then it's wrong. It doesn't matter if you do it as good as this other guy does, but it's just wrong. And Chris, I don't know if your job, if you do, you know what you do at your job, but if there's one guy who's just anal about certain things, and if it's not done one way, it's wrong. And this, you're like, dude,
yeah,
there's tons of ways to do this and get to the same point. You know, and that's how I finally figured it out. I was like, you guys still there?
Yeah,
we're here.
Okay, good. I heard a click. So, but I just, that's the whole thing. It's like I just, my whole thing was that I was very anal and one-sided about everything, and I just had to finally learn, you know what, there's different ways of doing things. If it's good, if it gets over with the people, if it's right, with, if it's professional and right with wrestling, then I shouldn't judge it. I should just enjoy it or help the guy within his style as best I can. So that's really what I enjoy doing now. I don't really like training guys from scratch anymore. I like to take guys who have been around for a couple of years and just kind of clean up their bad habits and just kind of help them along as best I can with, you know, trying to feel the crowd, trying to, you know, work a more strongly psychological match or try to build to their big spots. So they're not doing a big spot in the beginning of the match that doesn't get over very well. They're doing it more towards the end so it gets over big, you know. Because my whole thing is I always point to my trainees and I say, have I ever told you not to do a big move? And they're like, no. And I said, I told you to do the big move in the right place. Because my whole thing is that I respect the human body and its limitations. If you're going to do a moonsault or you're going to do a 450, I want the place, I want people to leave their feet. I want mothers throwing their babies in the air. I want people throwing money in the ring. I want all the good stuff to happen to you when you do it. If you do it and you don't get a reaction, you've wasted it. You've put a hurting on your body. You've stressed your body. And for what? You didn't even get a pop. So I want it just to mean everything in the world when they hit that big move. That's all. So I've tried to be as open-minded as I can and work within people's styles rather than try to change everybody into my own style. So that's probably the best way to say it.
Cool. Well, Bob, we really appreciate you coming on the show. And if I didn't have anywhere to go, we'd actually could probably go on another half hour or so. But
I will be happy to come on again. I just want people to remember that Ring of Honor is coming March 18th and 19th, Plymouth, Mass., about 40 miles south of Boston. Beautiful building, best building you ever go to for indie wrestling. And then we go to New York City on the 19th, and that's before the WWE show, so you can hit both of them, and you better. And then the big Atlanta weekend. And unfortunately, I won't see you guys there because we couldn't find an opponent good enough for the Prodigy. But we will definitely run into each other eventually.